For over 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., so set your dials. Also, remember, you can stream us online at www.federalnewsradio.com, and you can also listen to our shows and our archive show section by going to the Village Green website, which is www.myvillagegreen.com, and on the right-hand side of the homepage, there's a microphone icon that you can click on where you can listen to all of our previously recorded shows for absolutely free. Today, I've got a great show lined up for you. I really feel lucky to have this special guest on the phone. We're going to be talking about an issue that really nobody is immune to listening or learning about, and that is the issue of heart disease. And I have on the phone with me today, who's going to be the special guest for the whole hour, one of the preeminent leaders in our country in preventative cardiology, who's really pioneered phenomenal work, phenomenal detection methods, really doing cutting-edge preventative cardiology. We're going to talk today about what that means, how he gets the results that he gets, the different types of testing and imaging he uses to really uncover cardiovascular risk. And we're going to be talking about some of the shortcomings associated with the current approach to managing cardiology issues, specifically when it comes to preventative cardiology, and how the current system is not really all that working all that well. So I want to introduce him. This is Dr. Jeffrey Boone. He was named one of Men's Health Magazine's top doctors for men in 2007 and listed as one of the 17 top cardiovascular doctors in America. Dr. Boone is an internationally recognized expert on the effects of mental stress on the heart. Dr. Boone is a recipient of the prestigious Secretary's Award for Innovations in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention, presented by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. As an active clinician and researcher, he has authored and co-authored numerous professional articles and books pertaining to preventative cardiology, cardiometabolic risk, and stress medicine. As an international lecturer, Dr. Boone has spoken to tens of thousands of healthcare professionals throughout the world. His approach to the early detection and aggressive prevention of cardiovascular disease has been presented to audiences on four continents, in 12 countries, and in 47 states. Dr. Boone's unique clinical approach focuses on aggressive prevention of cardiovascular disease, including the evaluation of the cardiovascular consequences of mental stress, the early clinical use of the latest cardiac imaging techniques, and the advanced detection and treatment of cardiometabolic risk. Dr. Boone, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show with us today and educating our listeners about this incredibly important topic.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. It's great to be with you, and we'll look forward to a great discussion today.
Great. So maybe you should give a little bit of background about who you are. I read your bio, but maybe talk a little bit about your backstory, how you got into cardiology, and how you decided specifically to focus on this field of preventative cardiology, not necessarily what most cardiologists focus on, which is interventional cardiology.
Well, excellent, and thanks for the opportunity to get a little bit of the background as to how I got into this arena. I was trained as a exercise physiologist back in the 70s and was focused on the prevention of cardiovascular disease and just general health through the exercise, nutrition, lifestyle approaches, and noticed even in the 70s how the medical profession was actually, while doing quite brilliant work, was often very much lagging behind in motivating the appropriate lifestyle and heart healthy approaches that ought to be taken by the community. So I looked into how to explore that further and found that the influence of the medical community would be great in this area. So I ended up going to medical school for the express purpose of trying to prevent heart disease. Now, when I first started, there weren't really any good tests or drugs that found the diseases early enough to take charge of them. It was mostly motivating lifestyle changes. But then there were still a large group of people who would be doing everything appropriately and still would have untoward an untimely early heart disease death, stroke, sudden cardiac death, and other issues. So I began looking at those issues as being one that the medical community ought to focus on as well. So through the process of training, focused strictly in every course and every approach on strategies for the prevention of heart disease. Now, that was back in the days when they were just pioneering bypass surgery and stents. And so in those days, everybody kind of wondered why I was doing this. But I still felt that we needed aggressive medically trained leadership in the preventive cardiology arena. So my whole career has sort of been built on that. So as such, then, I've always been kind of a magnet for the latest, greatest approaches, whether it be medication, lifestyle, supplements, or even testing to find the disease early and then reverse it and control it. And what I've found is most every disease that our history and our population has dealt with have often first engendered some very cutting-edge medical approaches, first often surgically and often approaching the disease medically, but ultimately, whether it be tuberculosis or influenza or now heart disease, even cancer, the early aggressive, scientifically driven preventive strategies are often the best strategy of all. So I think we're now moving into a generation where we could, if appropriate strategies were developed, we could literally eliminate heart attack, stroke, and the related maladies. And then I think if we're cleaning out the circulation in that way, we may have great effects on the aging brain and other diseases that would be most positive as well. So my entire approach, unlike most of my medical colleagues, has been in the aggressive prevention of cardiovascular disease, with that being our single focus. And the blood vessels, a recent study showed there's at least 60,000 miles of blood vessels in a single body. And ultimately, that pipeline of blood is a healing or a disease-causing entity. If we can make that blood as perfectly clean as possible, then everything from the heart, the brain, to the kidneys ought to heal and last a long time to promote optimal health and life.
Well, that's a great introduction. Thank you. And I mean, honestly, I think to break it down for people and to take the discussion to the next place, I mean, the reason why I really wanted you on the show is, you know, I have a relative who came and saw you, and the cardiovascular assessment that this person got, it really blew my mind compared to what I typically see in day-to-day practice. I'm supposed to be, as a naturopathic doctor, specializing in preventative medicine, and in many respects, lifestyle, dietary interventions all work to support lower risk for cardiovascular disease. But when it comes down to actually sitting down with somebody and assessing what's going on, the tools that I have seen and the traditional evaluations that I have seen don't seem to be predictive. And the story is, Dr. Boone, one we hear all the time, somebody who they have a normal cholesterol level, they go, they get a full cardiac workup, they get a stress test, they pass with flying colors, and, you know, no later than a month after that, they have a heart attack, or they're, you know, admitted to the hospital having a bypass surgery or a stent. And it's like, well, all of the most advanced supposedly medical tests that you're going through from your primary care and your specialists are all checking out okay, but at the end of the day, there's still a huge amount of risk. And we know that 50% of people that have heart attacks have normal or optimal cholesterol levels. So there seems to be a lot missing. And where your practice and your focus really pioneered and really impressed me was that you've developed the testing, the tools, and the evaluation techniques to properly assess somebody for their true risk factors for cardiovascular disease. And I'd love for you to kind of get into some of the shortcomings that the current medical approach has and some of the things you've developed to help elicit a better predictive value.
Well, as you suggest, Dr. Bracero, there has been, I think, in my mind, a great disconnect in that arena of preventive cardiology. Now, as I started my medical training, we did a cholesterol profile. And that cholesterol profile, through the various studies led by the Framingham Longitudinal Epidemiologic Study and other, have shown that our ideas about cholesterol and blood pressure are important and good. But it started bothering me that even 20 or 30 years later, after my medical training was completed, we were still looking at sort of the same cholesterol profile. And if you look at everything from your cell phones to your computers to your automobiles, things have changed greatly. Why would we still be utilizing utilizing the very same sort of predictive basic cholesterol level. Then as I began searching that out over the last several decades, there's an infinite number of excellent tests that search even deeper into the vascular system, looking at early blockages and early inflammatory and other oxidative issues that are involved in the development of coronary artery and ultimately all atherosclerotic disease. So how do we pursue those? And I found that much of our American approach is driven by a cost effectiveness. Well, that's good from a population perspective. That is, from a mass population perspective, it's bad to have too much cholesterol, and it's generally good to have lower cholesterol. But as you suggest, about half of the people having severe sudden cardiac death, myocardial infarction, stroke, heart attack, heart failure, all of those entities, those people generally have not only good cholesterols, but oftentimes up to half the time a reasonably normal risk factor profile. So the usual approaches of just selecting blood pressure, cholesterol as part of your evaluation is a good one. And everything that your doctors are doing is true and good, but there's so much more to that. And I think that an approach that looks with that in mind is very effective at beginning to then get at the real issues. So in my case, I know that the person that's overweight, out of shape, and with a high cholesterol might be in trouble, but even they might still be escaping the ravages of cardiovascular disease and arterial clogging. I'm sometimes even more worried about the person who's fit, lean, and healthy, as genetics is a major part of the issue. So I'm a big believer in optimizing your preventive cardiology assessment with the latest in biomarkers or cutting-edge approaches to and analyzing what's going on in the arterial system. So beyond the cholesterol levels themselves, which are somewhat predictive, then advanced cardiovascular assessment is very important. And most laboratories these days, there's at least five or six major ones that offer very advanced cardiovascular biomarker protocols. Mm-hmm. So work with your doctor asking for more advanced testing. These are called NMR lipoprofile, the VAP test, particle assessment of cholesterol levels, advanced inflammatory tests. Most of those are now available through many of the standard protocols of evaluation, but certainly in our clinic, our approach would be to look for any possible predictive capability that some of these tests might have. For example, in addition to the cholesterol levels, we would want to further identify cardiac inflammatory markers. There's something called C-reactive protein that's fairly ubiquitous now. You can all have access to that test. And to me, that becomes a bit of a marker for whatever therapies we might introduce, whether they be drug or non-drug. And then beyond that, there are a variety of tests, cardiac troponin I, interleukin 6, interleukin 17A, TNF-alpha, myeloperoxidase. There's a bevy of about 10 inflammatory tests. And I think in my patients who are seeking the most optimal prevention possible, I want every one of those to be normal. Mm-hmm. They've all been well researched. They're still not on the mainstream as far as being recommended for all, but then I began to notice that the reason for most of our general medical recommendations have to do more with cost than your health. So mm-hmm. Two things the American public needs to be aware of is, one, that your insurance plan, no matter what it is very good, but it's very basic. And it is designed to be cost effective rather than to save your life. So I think it doesn't mean that they're evil or that's a bad situation, but it also means there's a lot more to go out and choose from. So I would work with your doctor, your cardiovascular doctor, to be aware of these additional possibilities for testing. And then be ready, if you are a consumer that's interested in the best, you should look for the opportunity to actually spend a few dollars out of your own pocket. I know my parents are getting close to 90, and they've had a lot of friends that have died being proud that their insurance covers everything. Well, if your insurance is covering everything, then it's probably not the cutting edge of approaches that you're getting. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have great insurance, but you need then to seek additional biomarkers and assessments outside of that process.
Right. And the cost effectiveness, conversation is so odd because even though some of these early therapies or testing may be more expensive, it certainly seems like if we could be predictive and identify people at risk and implement strategies to help reduce that risk, you know, there's no problem paying for very expensive bypass stent or interventional procedures, you know, but it's hard to for them to get on board with paying for some of these preventative ones. So it's about where you want your dollar spent and how you want to spend them, I guess.
It is very true, and that's a good point, is that much of our medical system has been told, much like firefighters, if we paid our firefighters only when there are fires, they probably wouldn't be quite as interested in preventing fires, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, I believe that that has happened in the medical profession, is that we are best rewarded when you're in the hospital needing excellent intervention. And I often love the work of the cardiologist, the cardiac surgeon, the emergency physicians, the work in the cath labs. All of that is brilliantly performed, but it's a little bit like, you know, Robert Griffin in your area or Peyton Manning in our area throwing a fourth quarter Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. That is, all those people are the best in their arenas. But it'd be better if we were ahead 35-0 going into the fourth quarter, if you use a football analogy. Right. In a sense, much of our cost effectiveness has been engendered toward that late intervention in the process as opposed to early detection.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I like to work back from is, do you actually have the disease? I've been lately thinking of the bloodstream much like a river. And if a river is somewhat polluted due to genetics, lifestyle, age, whatever might be involved in the ravaging of the bloodstream, if it's a young person, often it takes a while for the banks of the river to be affected. So, for example, someone with very bad-looking genetics or blood who's only 30 years old can probably do a lot with lifestyle, micronutrients, antioxidants, supplements, other interventions along those lines. But once the banks of the river have been damaged, then we may need real prescription medicines to help clean that out. Mm-hmm. And then I believe strategies that evaluate the plaque in the blood vessels, such as imaging of the carotid artery and various CAT scans that we can talk about in a few minutes, those need to be intervened if we see actual damage. So while we want to look at the bloodstream and the blood pressure and all the related risks and even advanced biomarkers, the actual identification of plaque is probably the key driver in my practice.
Yep.
And I think plaque identification strategies are critical for the population in the future.
That's a great point. So when we come back from the break, Dr. Boone, let's pick the conversation up right there and talk about some of the ways of detecting plaque and getting into this conversation a little bit deeper. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. And we're going to be back right after this break, so don't go anywhere.
Are you under a lot of stress at work? Pressure from the boss, budget cuts, impossible workloads? It can all take a serious toll on your health. But we can help. Village Green Apothecary has everything you need for a healthier lifestyle. A wide range of nutritional supplements, health-related books, and more. We've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living resources for over 45 years, and we'll take the time to advise you about your unique needs. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. They are the only raw multivitamin to include live enzymes and probiotics, amino acids, and antioxidants. They are gluten and dairy-free with no soy allergens. Vitamin Code is uncooked, untreated, unadulterated, and binder-free. Vitamin Code Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Get the one tiny pearl that delivers big acidophilus, 900% more. Get acidophilus pearls from Enzymatic Therapy. Each little pearl-shaped capsule makes a big impact, delivering up to 900% more live probiotics to the intestine than other products. This revolutionary product aids digestion, supports a healthy immune system, and is perfect for travelers who want to enhance intestinal health. This season, make sure to take the pearls that give you big acidophilus. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Staying mentally sharp means nourishing the mind as well as the body. That's why there's new Cognisure from Metagenics. Research shows that the active natural ingredient in Cognisure supports multiple mechanisms necessary for maintaining healthy cognition and a healthy brain as it ages. Cognisure is also easy to take in delicious, chewable chocolate tablets. Have a clear and bright future by maintaining mental capacity with healthy habits and Cognisure. Remember Cognisure for healthy brain aging support. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Do you have unique needs that a mass market pharmacy can't handle? Village Green Apothecary can help. Maybe your doctor prescribed a special compounded formula for you, or you have concerns about allergies or dietary supplements. We invite you to talk with one of our compounding specialists today. Our team includes pharmacists, nutritionists, clinical herbalists, and naturopaths offering customized products and personalized healthy living plans to ensure your well-being. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. We're here every Sunday from 10 to 11 a.m., so don't forget to tune in. My co-host, Dana Lake, will be back next week. Thank you all for listening. It's always an honor and a privilege to be with you here on the show, educating you about different topics related to health and wellness. Today, we've got Dr. Jeffrey Bruhn, named one of Men's Health Magazine's top doctors for men in 2007. He's also the recipient of the prestigious Secretary's Award for Innovation in Health Promotion and Disease Prevention, presented by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. He's a cardiologist who specialized his career in preventative cardiology, and talking to us today about the cutting-edge work that he's doing at his clinic out in Denver in helping people truly assess what their cardiovascular risk is. So in the last segment, Dr. Bruhn, we were talking about some of the, you know, different tests and different ways to look at cardiovascular health. In this segment, we're talking a little bit more about detection, and I'd love for you to get into some of the advanced tools that you use for detection and predictive risk when it actually comes to understanding, is there plaque present?
Yes, very good, Kevin. The discussion of plaque detection has been an important one throughout the country for the last 20 or 30 years. Most of our plaque detecting approaches have been, in my mind, looking more for blockages. For example, even angiograms are often looking for severe blockages that limit blood flow. Even treadmills and advanced treadmills with imaging with both nuclear medicine and echocardiography, all those are wonderful tests, but they're very much designed to pick up blockages that are greater than 70, 80, 90%, all of which are important, and often those blockages are serious enough that they may need a stent or a bypass surgery. However, if you really look at the data, some studies will show as much as 80%, certainly at least 70% of all heart attacks occur in blood vessels that would not fail either an angiogram or a treadmill with advanced imaging.
Now, why is that? Can you explain that for a second and why that is? Is that what you were getting to next? I don't want to cut you off, but I think it's an important point.
No, I think you're right. It very much is, because it's very easy as a population for us to focus on this blockage idea. And certainly that has a place in cardiovascular disease management, and it's probably the most highly technical and well-researched and often performed approach to atherosclerosis. But ultimately, the main cause of death is unstable plaque. So that plaque didn't all of a sudden become a 90% blockage. It grew through various stages, through a lot of rupturing and healing and development of this process through a lifetime of risk factors. Generally, your plaque status is an amalgam or a mixture of your genetics, lifestyle, age, and sex. So males, older, bad lifestyle, bad genetics would be the ones that have the biggest problems early on, mm-hmm. and vice versa. So the idea of picking up these blockages early became very important when studies began to show that when they looked at autopsies, they found that most of the heart attacks were occurring in people with less significant blockages, blockages that the day before the death would not have caused an abnormality seen on a treadmill test or even an advanced treadmill test. So those of us into prevention, and certainly all of the schools and the physicians around the country are aware of this, need to focus on early plaque stabilization.
So what happens in a situation like that if a plaque wasn't able to be detected? Is it that it ruptures and a part of the plaque then travels and blocks something? Is that what the problem is?
Yes, a good explanation. What happens is the plaque, as it grows under the surface of the skin that lines the inside of the artery, which is called the endothelium. And it's not that much different than your outside skin that's exposed to sunlight. And as you'll notice, if you get lesions in your outside skin, those boils or blisters or wounds usually occur under the skin, and the skin then elevates and then eventually ruptures as the infection is expunged. Same thing happens inside your blood vessels. It's not an infectious agent, but instead cholesterol particles, oxidative damage, and other things start to burrow under the surface of the lining of these arteries, begin to swell and grow, and that plaque then gets big enough to where it often will eventually block the artery, but more importantly, it gets to be where the lining covering that plaque becomes thin and inflamed and actually then ruptures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not unlike a little volcano bursting or a boil bursting or a pimple bursting. And when it bursts, then you have this bloodstream that's floating on top of this, which is the river of blood that's flowing over this plaque lesion. Either the clot that then develops around that rupture site develops at that site and blocks blood flow downstream, or some of the material can float on downstream and cause heart attack and stroke. And so the shrinking of that plaque, the stabilization of that plaque is really the key to preventive cardiology. But then if you look at millions of 40-year-olds, who needs stabilization? And so in my practice, and I think what ought to drive American medicine, is the detection of plaque. Of all the 40-year-olds, and certainly from 40 on, who has plaque? The ones with plaque, regardless of their cholesterol levels, regardless of their blood pressure levels, need plaque-stabilizing efforts. So the detection of that plaque is very important, but somewhat difficult until the last couple of decades. Now, what we found is that the entirety of the circulation is like a long highway. So if you can measure a segment of a highway that has similar traffic, you're probably going to get a pretty good idea of what's happening throughout that entire highway. It turns out that one of the blood vessels that's most usefully imaged are the large arteries that come out of the top of the heart and they feed your brain through the neck. They're called the carotid arteries, and they lie on each side of the Adam's apple. You can feel your pulse if you put your finger on your neck and slide it over to the side. Those arteries are about the size of your little finger, and they lend themselves to ultrasound imaging. And then just before they get to the angle of the jaw, they bifurcate, or they divide like a river splitting. And at that point, there's a large level of turbulence as the blood is surging up toward the brain. All of that's very important. But after, let's say, an average of 40 years, that turbulence can lead to plaque developing at that site. So we've become a big fan, and I think even some of the leading cardiovascular doctors in the world are looking at worldwide approaches to cardiovascular disease. We can't continue to just stent and bypass diseases. We've got to find it early and prevent it. Just like tuberculosis, we couldn't continue to just do surgeries on the lung. We needed to find strategies to eliminate the disease so it didn't have to become surgical. So at that bifurcation, at that dividing point, often plaque appears at about almost exactly the same level that it begins to appear in the first one-third of the widowmaker artery in the front of the heart, called the left anterior descending coronary artery. So we find that a quick image of the heart, in some places we've gotten that in mass screening to as low as $60 a person, to image plaque or no plaque. And that's the great dividing point in your health. As opposed to measuring more advanced and expensive tests, just that simple carotid plaque may be a test that literally the whole world needs at about 40. Now, I use the term 40 years because it's kind of an average where just being young is not going to help you. But generally, you want to image your atherosclerotic vessels, image your vascular system by age 40 or 10 years younger than your youngest relative ever had trouble. So if Grandpa Joe died at 43 of a heart attack, or had bypass surgery at 43, or had a stent at 43, or if Uncle Jim had a TIA or a tiny stroke or a stent at age 43, then about 33, you as a patient might want to start looking at your own cardiovascular status. And this plaque imaging becomes critical. And so our goal in our clinic and here in Denver, and I think worldwide, is to provide that to individuals that then decide their course of action. Mm-hmm. And actually, with mass screening, the cost can get so low that it's actually better to not even be involved in the insurance system, just paying cash for that. The test that looks for plaque sometimes in hospitals can be greater than a couple thousand dollars. But if we can get a mass screening approach, those are then the people, regardless of their risk factors, that need plaque stabilization strategies.
Okay. So, I mean, I think some people are aware of that carotid artery screen, and it is a great non-invasive, inexpensive way to start assessing for plaque. Is it usually reflective of what's going on in the heart? So if somebody has a minor plaque formation in the vessel, I mean, what's the next step? Of course, if there's no plaque, then you would assume that what I'm doing is working and my vessels are healthy and things are going pretty well. Or if there is a presence of, let's say, a minor amount of plaque, you know, what's the next step? And then, of course, if there's major plaque noted on the carotid artery, of course, I'm sure more stringent interventions are recommended. But where do you go next?
Yes, well said. So the plaque, no plaque differentiation is very important to decide treatment. Then there's a lining, aligning the coronary, the carotid artery that's called the intimal media layer, and many softwares can now measure the thickness of that. So the thicker that, it's kind of like the breeding ground for plaque. So that would be the next step, looking at the intimal media thickness. And then as a patient and as a healthcare provider, you want to say, did that test really reflect what I was expecting? And oftentimes, again, we're always surprised, even in our work with the NFL. It's not always the overweight, out-of-shape lineman. It could be a skinny little defensive back that has a lot of plaque as well. So if your findings don't meet your suspicions, either as a patient, then you may want to look further. There are high-speed CAT scans, and I usually don't recommend those for anyone under 40 because there is a bit of radiation exposure. But high-speed CAT scans are called ultra-fast multi-detector electron beam CAT scans. They were pioneered in the late 80s, and they really became a very fashionable thing to look at coronary artery calcium. So that's an actual test of the plaque itself. Now, as plaque develops, about 20% of it is calcified. And that actually, like bones are picked up on X-ray, in the heart there should be no bone, if you will. Mm-hmm. But if they find calcium deposit in the heart, then you have plaque. Anyone in my practice who has even a smidge of calcium, then that's like finding a little bit of breast cancer. That's the best time to cure it. So a tiny bit of calcium in the coronary, and those tests used to be a couple $1,000. Now most big cities and most hospitals have actually a cash pay formula for those tests. And I know here in Denver you can get a scan like that at almost any hospital in town for $95.
Wow.
And that is actually a great investment for almost everybody in America can afford that to assess the process. Now, what we found, though, that's not a great test to follow the plaque over the years to see if you're successfully reversing the plaque. Because what we have found is that, as I said, 20% of the untreated plaque is calcium. So it's a little bit like a volcano growing. You've got the hot lava underneath that's not calcified yet, and then you have the calcified peaks of the little mountains that are growing in your arteries. If you treat that aggressively, we have found that the calcium content of the plaque, as does its entire stability, goes up. So what we found is the intimal media lining of the carotid is a good place to monitor change and improvement. The calcium score more good to identify plaque versus no plaque.
Mm-hmm.
As we treat plaque over the years, more and more of it becomes calcified. So those are both tests, the carotid imaging and hopefully the addition of the intimal media thickness or coronary calcium score,
mm-hmm,
are both very accessible to literally the entire population. And even those who can't afford it, probably we ought to get them to do those tests for free, but then that ought to then divide who needs medication or not. Like if I find plaque in the carotid or calcium in the coronary, then I'm very prone to want that patient to consider taking even a small little 81 milligram aspirin a day, because that aspirin will prevent the clot that forms around that plaque should it burst,
mm-hmm,
or rupture.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can sort of get into what I would do if I find plaque.
Yeah. Yeah. So so let's get into that next. And I'm assuming that you take those imaging techniques and you put them in the context of the lifestyle, the cutting edge laboratory evaluations that have been developed over the last decade, and you build out an entire profile of what's going on. Because sometimes it's important to understand, especially if you have someone that is thin and in shape but is showing signs of calcification, what are the causes? What is the mechanism in the body that's creating the inflammation or the damage to the blood vessel, or what is it? What's going on? And there's genetic testing, and there's inflammatory testing, there's the lipid testing that goes into so much more detail than what's typically done to help us understand the hows and whys of why that person is developing plaque, which is, of course, as you know, understanding the hows and whys of why the disease is developing is the key to understanding how to prevent and reverse it. So when we come back from the break, Dr. Boone, I'd love for you to get into some of the ways, because you've alluded to it, but in your clinic, you've developed protocols where you are literally reversing these blockages, these plaques, these calcifications. You're literally improving the blood vessel health without going into surgical interventions, not stents, not bypasses. You're finding people with blockages and you're reversing them through your treatment protocols and improving their cardiovascular health dramatically and reducing their risk dramatically. And in the next segment, I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about the specifics of how you do that. So don't go anywhere. This is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500. And we're going to be back right after this break.
Megafood Premium Whole Food Supplements are the only supplements crafted from scratch with farm-fresh whole foods to deliver nourishment the way nature intended. Megafood believes Mother Nature knows best. They select only fresh whole food, harvested at the peak of ripeness, handle it gently and with care to deliver its vital essence to you in every bottle. Megafood, from farm to tablet. Our name is our promise. For more information, visit us online at megafood.com.
Zymogen is pleased to announce the arrival of Fit Food, a delicious, high-quality, functional food that's formulated to support weight management, healthy body composition, glycemic management, cardiovascular and immune health, and more. Each delicious serving of Fit Food contains 21 grams of pure New Zealand-sourced bioactive whey protein, 6 grams of fiber immune-supporting oat beta-glucan, and additional glutamine, glycine, taurine, and MCTs. Fit Food provides holistic support for today's active body. Learn more at Zymogen.com. Available now through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
All over the world, people are beginning to discover fish oil is one of the best secrets for unlocking great health. Thousands of studies have shown the amazing effects of these powerful omega-3s for heart health. Plus, fish oils have even been shown to balance moods and lessen anxiety. With exceptional taste, unrivaled freshness, and unsurpassed purity, Nordic Naturals is the easy way to get your omega-3s every day. To learn more, visit Village Green Apothecary or visit NordicNaturals.com. Nordic Naturals, committed to the planet, committed to pure and great-tasting omega oils.
The brain requires nutrition just like the rest of the body. And this is where Gero Formula's Neuro Optimizer comes to the rescue. Neuro Optimizer is a concentrated source of nutrients needed for memory, mood, concentration, and focus. Neuro Optimizer supplies the building blocks for neurotransmitters, the chemicals that allow cells in the brain to communicate and to file away memories. Neuro Optimizer is the nutritional answer to the brain's needs. To learn more about formulas, visit Gero.com. Gero Formulas, available at Village Green Apothecary.
Did you know at Village Green we offer everyday savings on top quality nutritional supplements, including herbs and homeopathic remedies, plus personal care products and more? That's right. In addition to our other big sales events, you can save up to 20% on most everything you need for a healthier lifestyle today and every day. At Village Green, we've been providing customized nutrition and healthy living products for over 45 years. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host for today, Dr. Kevin Passero. If you're just tuning in to this phenomenal show related to cardiovascular health, you can always listen to the show in its entirety by going to the Village Green website, www.myvillagegreen.com. And on the right-hand side of the homepage, there's a microphone icon. If you click on it, it'll take us to all of take you to all of our previously recorded shows that you can download and listen to absolutely free. Today we're talking with Dr. Jeffrey Boone, one of the leaders in preventative cardiology, who's truly pioneered an approach to preventative cardiology, not just interventional cardiology, which is where most cardiology lives today. It's an important therapy because many people don't get their cardiovascular disease caught until it's too late, till they've already had a myocardial infarction or a heart attack or some other type of problem, and they need some type of intervention in order to save their life. But truly, as I believe, the key is in prevention, and that is what Dr. Boone has pioneered. So in the last segment, Dr. Boone discussed some of the techniques he uses to utilize or to understand whether or not there is calcification or a need for aggressive preventative therapy. In this segment, I'd like Dr. Boone for you to discuss a little bit about your approaches and kind of the things that you see in patients. I mean, who are the patients that you work with? What type of outcomes are you seeing? What type of things are you detecting when they walk in the door? What do they look like a year or two later? And how would that course of their health have changed if they had never come to see you? And then I want you to talk a little bit about the strategies you use to get those results.
Well, very good. And as we closed the last segment, we were looking at atherosclerosis imaging, the imaging of the plaque that really is the biggest cause of death and disability in the Western world today. The imaging of that plaque then prompts the actual visualization that often motivates optimal therapy. The carotid and the coronary calcium score are both tests that help us to access the knowledge about the individual's plaque status. Now, then the next step would be, what do we do with that? And that's where, once I'm driven by plaque versus no plaque, let's say, for example, I've got a young man with abnormal biomarkers and cholesterol and blood pressure, but he has no plaque yet, I might be able to spend several years working on non-drug approaches through micronutrients, antioxidants, omega-3s, all sorts of approaches, lifestyle, nutrition, weight loss, exercise. But I think in any of those areas, and especially out here in Colorado, a lot of people are very interested in non-drug approaches. What I'm a believer in is, though, all of those non-drug approaches have to have measurable benefits. That is, we can't just think that these interventions are good, or decide that we're going to eat nothing but pomegranates from now on and that's going to work, or decide on a vegan diet. All of those are wonderful, but I want objective evidence of improvement. So often we develop then with our patients a test-retest strategy, whether it be simple blood biomarkers, cholesterol profiles, or even advanced cardiovascular imaging. Our goal is the reversal of that process. And I've seen dramatic reversals both with medication as well as occasionally without medication. So driven by the assessment of plaque, then we develop the overall treatment program. And again, the younger the patient, the less the plaque, the more the treatment can be non-drug approached. The treatment then is multifactorial. Any variable that I can measure and treat with nothing but great benefits to my patient, those are variables that I'm looking at. So, for example, let's just take me as an example. When I was in my early 50s, I applied these tests to myself. So, for example, at age 52, again, on the cutting edge of preventive cardiology, trying to look at every possibility, we're now in the age of atherosclerosis imaging. So the first time I imaged my carotid artery, for example, I'd already had a CT scan looking for coronary calcium, and that CT scan showed a calcium score of 1. Now, I've seen a calcium score as high as 9 to 10,000, so I had very, very trace evidence of plaque. At the time, I'm playing athletics, I'm pretty lean and fit, not the greatest diet in the world. But then the next thing, imaging from a imaging perspective that I would perform on my patients and again on myself, was the carotid imaging. And in the carotid bifurcation, the dividing point, I see a 20% plaque. We measure it, obviously, almost insignificant. Even if I'd had the test done at the hospital, they probably would have reported it as no significant disease. But that's like telling a woman with a malignant breast lump, let's wait until that grows bigger before we really get excited about it. So to me, just a little bit of plaque prompted treatment. So using me as an example, again, the intimal media thickness, the lining of my carotid artery, which is very accessible with ultrasound, painless. Again, we've gotten the test below even $100 here in Denver to do that on mass screening efforts. My intimal media thickness was 0.881 millimeters thick. So we're measuring it in thousands of millimeters. Easy software to do that, much more important than my blood pressure, cholesterol. That was the thickness that we would expect in a 74-year-old while I was only 52. Mm. So that prompted me to not only optimize non-drug therapy with micronutrients, antioxidants, appropriate omega-3s, optimizing all of that, but it prompted me to take a real medicine, a statin drug, atorvastatin, which is generic Lipitor. The reason for that is not because I like the drug companies necessarily. Those drugs work to reverse plaque. Over the years, then, that has stabilized my plaque, which, again, was very minor. Most people would think I don't even need to treat it. But over the years, my calcium score in that soft plaque has gone from 1 to 19, meaning that if you look at that plaque, you'll see now it's just an extinct volcano, if you will, that's now calcified. Very tiny plaque, but stabilized. My intimal media thickness, as correlated with the arterial age of 74, went from 0.881 down to 0.704 millimeters thick. About as low as you can get it is 0.6 millimeters thick in an adult. My arterial age, a simpler way to look at this, went from 74 to 52. And the way to accomplish that, I wouldn't even retest myself except my blood. Every marker that I could measure was made optimal by high-dose statin, a little bit of niacin, aspirin, micronutrients, and sort of end of story. That should mean that for the rest of my life, the arteries will be cleaned out. Mm-hmm. Now, we also do an advanced CT angiogram on patients, and you and I, Kevin, have worked on some patients where we've seen 70% blockages drop to 30% in the CT angiogram part of the testing as well. So those are sort of some of the strategies we use. With our executive patients, we do CT angiography. So beyond the calcium score, we will occasionally image the entire plaque with a contrast injection, and that allows us to see not just the 20% of the plaque that's calcified, but the other 80% of the untreated plaque, soft, vulnerable, prone to rupture. And over the years, I've seen many examples of plaque literally for sure stabilizing, but most of the time shrinking in its size and its obstructive capacity, which it's exciting for a patient to see a 62% blockage drop to 41%. But more importantly, from my perspective, is that plaque has now been stabilized, and the patient will be good to go. And then I think the side effects of that are cleaning out the arteries of the brain, which keeps the lawn upstairs green instead of the browning of dementia and the aging brain as well. So I think the entire coordination of plaque assessment, plaque regression, optimization of biomarkers, and then certainly blood pressure assessment, which is something we ought to talk about, is involved in that process as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important for people to know the calcification that you're talking about, where you're plaque in your carotid arteries calcified. I think most people would think that calcification is a bad thing, but what you have helped educate me and many of your patients is that the unstable plaque, the part that's not calcified, can oftentimes be the more dangerous portion of the plaque because that's the portion that's more likely to rupture. When it's calcified, it's stabled, and as you refer to it, it's like an extinct volcano. There may be a slight blockage, but if it's calcified and stable, we know it's not going to rupture, and it's very unlikely that it's going to grow, and if we've dealt with all of the other biomarkers and problems. So that's, I think, an important point. Let's talk about blood pressure assessment, because this is an issue that I thought was also very interesting in your evaluation of patients. The way you evaluate blood pressure is very different than just sitting somebody down and taking a blood pressure at the beginning of their physical exam. And I want you to explain kind of what you do and why you do it.
Yes, excellent. As we look at then the stabilization of plaque, and I think your analogy that you just used is very appropriate. When the plaque is soft and you have this river of blood passing over it, it's more likely to rupture when stress raises the blood pressure. We want the plaque to be dense, stable, scar-like, calcified with treatments over the years. But when I find plaque, then it changes my entire approach to blood pressure. So in all of our patients, our blood pressure assessment is done with not only a lying down supine measurement and then a sitting measurement, but then we put the patient through several multiple mental challenges. It's been well known in the literature for decades that the blood pressure that's more predictive of your health is the blood pressure during the working hours, the daylight hours, the stress hours. even the circadian rhythm of cardiovascular events shows that often the heart attack rate surges as stress surges as the morning hours of the workplace develop. Mm-hmm. Even time zone changes and daylight savings time changes, weekends, all of those are involved in changes in cardiovascular risk expression. Well, the reason for that is the surge of blood pressure and then related entities are involved in that process. So with all of our patients, we do something called the mental office stress testing. So it's not a physical treadmill, although those are wonderful tests as well. It's kind of a mental treadmill. So the blood pressure is measured not only at rest, supine and sitting, but during a mathematics challenge, reverse alphabet, an ice water, and a grip challenge, which are designed to simulate the kinds of blood pressures you'll have out in the real world. For example, my blood pressure might be 100 over 70 when I'm sleeping, 120 over 80 at work, but I've measured it during a lecture. It can get as high as 180 over 100 during a lecture. Mm-hmm. And if I had plaque, that could be dangerous. So, for example, we work with a large fire department here in Denver, and out of 200 firefighters, we found that 100 of them had a surge of blood pressure during a serial 7 mathematics challenge. For example, we just had them subtract numbers backwards, 777, 770, 763, mm-hmm. 756, 749, and so on down towards zero, and measure their blood pressure during a supervised mental challenge. So 100 out of 200 of the firefighters, their blood pressure went above 140 over 90. Now, that's not anything more than ought to be used to motivate them to lose weight, eat more healthy, 10 fruits and vegetables a day, you know, micronutrients, other things that might lower their blood pressure. But among those 100 who had a surge of blood pressure during stress, 29 had plaque in the carotids. In the carotid arteries, they had atherosclerosis. So in those people, that surge of blood pressure is very important because that is like a surging river down a mountain stream. Mm-hmm. And even if that river is perfectly clean, the damage to the banks of the river could occur during that surge or flood of stress. And in the firefighter literature, even the New England Journal of Medicine has reported that the timing of death of a firefighter from heart attack and stroke, which causes 50% of their on-the-job death and disability, the timing of that is that heart attack is 100 times more likely to occur during fire suppression or alarm response.
Yeah.
So the whole idea in that profession is to stabilize the plaque, and part of that is to stabilize the blood pressure not only at rest but during stress.
Mm-hmm.
So my assessment of plaque biomarkers and others very important. So now that I know I've got a carotid plaque, I want my blood pressure during stress to be even lower.
Yep.
And that, I think, is very important. The world's literature would show that has the effect, yet you're very often not stressed or not evaluated during stress in the typical cardiovascular evaluation.
Sure, it's a much more dynamic evaluation of what's going on. And let's face it, many people are under stress, sometimes good, sometimes bad. It could be stress because you have an abusive boss or a bad work situation and feel chronically stressed all day. Or perhaps you're, you know, the CEO of a multi-million dollar company and it's, you know, stress of running a company and things that you enjoy. Stress is not always a bad thing, but the dynamic assessment of what your blood pressure is doing in that type of scenario clearly relates to cardiovascular risk and is something that is typically ignored. Now, Dr. Boone, when we come back from the break, I'd like for you to just talk a little bit about statin therapy, because I know it's something that you use effectively in your practice to reverse plaques, but there is some debate about statin therapy and the way that it's applied, looking at just the average cholesterol, it's a little elevated, get on statins, and the utility of how many cardiovascular events will be averted, how many people you have to treat to avert one cardiovascular event when applied to the general population and the guidelines that are being used right now. I'd love for you to share your thoughts on that. A lot of people have some concerns about the typical knee-jerk recommendations to get on a statin with just an elevated cholesterol on an annual physical, and I think it's something the listeners would love to hear about. So this is Dr. Kevin Passera with the Essentials of Healthy Living. We're going to come back right after the segment to be talking a little bit about statin therapy. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this break.
For over 45 years, people have relied on Village Green Apothecary to give them individualized nutrition, pharmacy, and healthy living products. Village Green will give you the kind of person-to-person help and attention that mass-market pharmacies have long ago forgotten. You can depend on us for knowledge, experience, product selection, and a smile. Visit Village Green in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane. Call us at 301-530-0800 or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com. We're here to help you.
New from Garden of Life, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins. That's right, raw. Made with the highest quality standards to preserve raw nutrients,
uncooked, untreated, unadulterated. They are binder-free with no fructose, maltodextrin, magnesium stearate, or cornstarch. With live enzymes and probiotics, Vitamin Code Raw Multivitamins from Garden of Life. Go beyond vitamins and minerals. Get the code, Vitamin Code. Now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Wondering how to turn your bedroom into a hothouse? The answer is Hot Plants, the natural herbal way to make sex fun, vibrant, and satisfying. Two unique formulas, one for him and one for her, were developed by Chris Kilham, the medicine hunter. Chris's book, Hot Plants, features these exciting products from enzymatic therapy. Hot Plants, from the science of enzymatic therapy, now available at Village Green Apothecary and online at myvillagegreen.com.
Some things are hard to stomach, and life doesn't stop for occasional immune challenges or intestinal distress. Probilarty from Metagenics offers a new targeted probiotic approach for intestinal support. Help maintain control while traveling or as a follow-up to antibiotic therapy to support intestinal flora for healthy intestinal function. Probilarty provides ID-certified probiotic strains suggested by research to enhance certain aspects of immune function in addition to promoting a healthy balance of intestinal microflora. Probilarty is the go-to probiotic for patients on the go. Get it today. Available through your healthcare professional and Village Green Apothecary.
Have you ever wondered why the cold and flu season occurs in the fall and winter months? One theory is because of a decrease in sun exposure, our bodies don't make enough vitamin D, which is essential to proper immune function. That's why medical experts recommend supplementing with vitamin D. Thorne Research's vitamin D products are made from pure vitamin D, with no preservatives or unnecessary ingredients added. Support your immune system with Thorne's vitamin D1000 and D5000. These and other immune-supporting formulas are always available at Village Green.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Essentials of Healthy Living here on AM 1500, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. Today, we've been talking with Dr. Jeffrey Boone about preventative cardiology. If anybody wants to learn more about Dr. Boone's practice, visit www.booneheart.com. He offers executive physicals, incredible workups. I've walked patients through this process at his Denver office, spent time with him there, and it is an amazing experience and truly the cutting edge of preventative cardiology and something that I believe everybody should make the time and set aside the resources to do. It is an unbelievable and irreplaceable investment in your health. Now, Dr. Boone, in this segment, we don't have a lot of time left, but I'd love for you to talk a little bit about statin drugs, some of the pros and cons, some of the controversy, and some of the ways that maybe they're not used all that effectively. And then I know that you use them very effectively in your protocols.
Well, thanks, Kevin. And yes, you're right. Statin drugs, I think, are the cornerstone of the weapons we have against plaque at this point. I, like you, have been searching for alternatives for a long time, but I can see nothing but good coming from their use in the appropriate patient. Now, I think the trouble is, as we suggested, to me, the statin drugs are not cholesterol drugs. They are plaque drugs. And one of the problems with the data that has been developed around these drugs, which shows very oftentimes minimal benefit to the population in general, is I think most of the time they're given to the wrong people. They should be given to the people with plaque, not just high cholesterol. Often the cholesterol level allows me to determine what dose to use. So I think that would improve things. And you look at the number needed to treat to save a life, and it becomes a huge economic and scientific issue. But I think in practices like ours and yours, where we're identifying the patient at risk and then treating them, I'm expecting to have no heart attacks and stroke in the identified person early enough with aggressive care, and often statin is a part of that care. Certainly, as I mentioned in my own case study, I use it myself. I've seen nothing but plaque regression be involved in that process. And in the use of them, I want aggressive plaque stabilization, which is generally accomplished by optimizing every biomarker or risk factor I can find. So if I'm going to take a statin, I want my LDL cholesterol below 70. I want my total below 100. I want my triglycerides below 100. I want my HDL cholesterol above 50. And those are the standard general uses of the typical traditional cholesterol panel. So even if you're just getting those panels, make sure that you redefine aggressive. To me, we need to redefine significant and aggressive. Significant disease is any plaque, and aggressive care really shouldn't involve ambulances and emergency rooms and blood on the floor. It ought to involve aggressive use of these medicines. So I love the statins in the appropriate patient, and I found uniformly they appropriately reverse and stabilize heart disease, especially if they're used in conjunction with the appropriate biomarkers and other approaches. approaches that we've talked about today. Crestor, Lipitor are the most powerful. Simvastatin, lovastatin, pravastatin, even Lipitor, atorvastatin is now generic. So very cost effectively, these drugs can be used as a cornerstone of therapy, but often they're only part of it. We need to treat blood pressures and other biomarkers and micronutrients and clotting as a part of that as well.
So the most effective way to use them, of course, in any situation is to identify the patients that would benefit most. It makes perfect sense. So we are out of time, Dr. Boone. Again, if you want to learn more about Dr. Boone and his cutting-edge preventative cardiology practice, visit www.booneheart.com. That's B-O-O-N-E heart.com. Dr. Boone, we'll have this posted in the archive show section, and we'll be promoting the heck out of it because I think it's a great education for everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today on the show.
Thanks for your work, Kevin, and great to be with you.
All right, everybody, that wraps up today. Thank you for tuning in. Next week, Dana Lake will be here, and I'll be here the week after. This is Dr. Kevin Passero wishing you all the best of health. Until next time.
Ah, the joy of commuting in Washington. Whether you work on the Hill or outside of the Beltway, you know how stressful it is to get around. Stress can take a serious toll on your health, and Village Green Apothecary can help. We offer over 10,000 healthy living products, including top-quality nutritional supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Our nutritionists and pharmacists are here to advise you about creating your very own individualized healthy living plan. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda, 5415 West Cedar Lane, or check out our website at myvillagegreen.com.